Other men come over, and Guzman instructs Isidro to shoot the 100-yard target, which he does. Same results. He smiled. By this time, Guzman has figured it out and has the young man shoot the old Garand at the 100-yard target, but this time asks him to grade his shots, one in each surrounding circle, which he does. He laughed. Now, no one is smiling. And Guzman says the boy is the finest natural talent he has ever seen. Beware the man with only one weapon, for he surely knows how to use it. The priest patted the table. Amen. How come he's not working for the police? He was trained and joined the force, but was asked to make a shot that he would not take. He wears an interesting charm around his neck. Riablo. In the beliefs of the Tarahum Aras, the Riablo aligns himself with the devil, but is not wholly evil. He works with God in aligning the balance of things in a sacrifice. Seems to me Isidro has sacrificed enough. See, he now works freelance, and whenever Guzman calls. I sip my water. The place where I'm going, Estante del Diablo, a village near an old sulfur mine, a rugged and beautiful place. I began my service there, but things became worse and worse, things that now must go unnamed. It was one of the central villages for the auctioning of livestock. But now they auction other things. There was some movement from across the room, and Isidro reappeared with Alonso, the carriage driver I'd met earlier in the day. Are you down here listening to old wives' tales? I stood. Some. Alonso turned to Father Rubio and spoke in Spanish, the conversation becoming somewhat heated. Finally, turning to me, the priest explained, "He wants you to accompany him to the cathedral proper, because it would be easier to transport his uncle back through the main entrance to the car, but I have warned him that the policía and others have been here on the church grounds, and I think you would be safer going out the way you came. I would say it is likely that they are looking for you already." I turned to Alonso. "We're going to kind of stand out, don't you think?" "My uncle has a plan. Come on, we don't have a lot of time." I glanced at all of them in turn, and started after Alonso, but then noticed that Isidro was still standing by the priest. "He's not coming?" "He's Tarahumara. He'll run." Without another word, Alonso turned and started up the steps. The interior of the cathedral was surprisingly modern, and the warm glow of the oak pews and amber stained glass made it seem like more of a communal area than a place of worship. Although a few of the faithful were scattered in the front, with one or two older women seated in the rear, near the main entrance, their heads covered with mantillas. Alonso and the priest led me down the side, Rubio stopping to speak with one of the women. The seer was seated about two-thirds of the way back, leaning forward on the pew in front of him, his hands clasped in what seemed fervent prayer. I slid next to him and placed the gym bag on the floor between us. I couldn't help but close my eyes in the calm and quiet of the place. "Take off your hat, you are in the house of God." I opened my eyes to see that the legless man was finished praying and now was sitting back and staring at me with his sightless eyes. I slipped the palm leaf off and held it in my hands. "What, you can hear it on my head?" He glanced up at the vaulted ceiling of the nave. "Do you believe in God, Sheriff?" "I guess." I smiled, feeling pretty much ambushed here in the cathedral. "You could say I've had my doubts lately." He grinned back, probably sensing my smile from the way I spoke. "In the face of all the miracles celebrated in this cathedral, how can you doubt?" "Well, I would balance them with all the sorrow and pain." "See, but the pain and sorrow are there to remind us that we are alive." "Uh-huh." I could feel his dead eyes on the side of my face. "You do not believe in miracles?" "Nope." He nodded. "You should. It may be the only way you get your daughter back." There was a noise in the vestibule, and my eyes followed the priest as he hurried toward the back, where a group of policía appeared dressed in their black BDUs and helmets and carrying automatic weapons. The officer in the front was a tall man and the only one to remove his helmet, revealing a thick shock of silver hair. Father Rubio was having an animated conversation with him as I tried to slip down in the pew, but the officer took a hard look at us before he motioned for his men to retreat, giving me one last glance as they departed. Alonzo met the priest as he walked through the aisle, the two of them leaning down in front of us, both of them speaking at once, the priest in Spanish and Alonzo in English. "It's the PF, and they're looking for you."
"Did they see me?"
"Yes, and they are waiting outside because Father Rubio says they cannot enter the church with their weapons."
I posited a suggestion. "How about we go back out the way we came in? They will have someone at all the doors." "Did you admit that the gringo is the sheriff?"
We all turned to look at the seer, who appeared deep in thought. Alonzo was the first to speak.
"No, but he is the only gringo in the place."
The seer smiled.
"Father Rubio, are you in possession of your marvelous pen collection? And in it, do you have a blue marker?"
Rubio glanced around at the absurdity of the question.
"Si, pero..."
"Give it to Alonzo, please."
The priest plucked a large marker from his pocket and handed it to Alonzo.
"Now get the bag you told me about."
Exasperated, Alonzo reached down and picked up the heavy blue and gray duffel from the floor and balanced it on the back of the pew between us.
"Now what?"
"Carefully write the initials B and L in capital letters on the bag, both sides, please."
"Uncle, this is no time for games."
"Do as I tell you."
Alonzo did as he was told, carefully blocking the letters on the light panels of the bag.
"Do you want me to put periods after the letters?"
"Artist's discretion. If you think it helps in the design, feel free to do so."
The young man grumbled, but decided to make the addition.
"If I knew what the hell I was doing, it might help."
"Don't blaspheme in the house of God."
The seer turned to look in my direction.
"Are you ready to go?"
Yep.
"Then if you would be so kind as to place me in my wheelchair."
Glancing at the others, who seemed as perplexed as I was, I lifted the man from the pew and seated him in his chair, which was at the end of the aisle.
"What now?"
He glanced around as if it were obvious.
"We leave, but first place the gym bag in my lap."
I reached over and took it from Alonzo, lowered it into the space between the seer's half legs, and figured it was about 2 centuries of incarceration in the bag. Turning him around, I slowly pushed him toward the door as the others fell in behind.
"Whatever this plan is, I sure hope it works."
The seer nodded and motioned toward his nephew.
"Alonzo, it would be best if you were pushing and the sheriff was beside me."
Father Rubio called after us. "I will pray for your safety." The young man muttered under his breath,
"For all the good that will do."
I took my place alongside the wheelchair as we closed in on the large double doors at the front of the church, and I wondered what in the world the seer had cooked up. I pushed open the door, and there must have been 20 cops standing just outside, and another dozen on the plaza below, leaning on their vehicles or hanging off the heavy guns mounted in the back of the half-ton black pickups. I figured we were going to be spending the night in a Mexican jail, and then I would be handed back over to the FBI, and that was the best-case scenario. The tall man with the silver hair stood at the front, still holding his helmet, and studying me as I held the door open for the seer and his entourage. He stepped forward and extended his hand, careful to brush the old man's fingers so that he could easily find them.
"It is good to see you in church, my friend. You are changing your ways?"
"Ah, Colonel Hernandez,"
the seer laughed,
"just making bigger deals."
The head fed motioned toward one of his men, who sneered as he came up the steps and took my arm.
"Will you introduce us to your friend?"
The seer looked embarrassed and then shoved the gym bag in his lap a little toward Hernandez. The blind man thrummed the bag where the initials BL were evident, as if in an attempt to tip him off. Then, in a low voice, he murmured,
"This is no time for jokes, jefe."
Then the seer threw an arm out toward me with dramatic flair, his voice mimicking that of a sports announcer.
"Do not tell me that you do not recognize the great number 74, All-American defensive tackle, 11-time Pro Bowl and Super Bowl champion, Mr. Cowboy Bob Lilly?"
Every once in a while, when all the chips are down and you don't stand a chance, a moment arrives where you have the opportunity to do something so erratic, so outlandish, so stupid, that only an innocent person would even think of doing. And for me, that moment was now. Yanking my arm away from the heavy-set policeman, I crouched slightly, put my shoulder into his chest, and heaved him up and away just like I had as an offensive lineman with the tackling dummies back at USC all those years ago. I'd caught him off balance, and he flew backward, crashing flat onto the concrete, handily saved from concussion by the padding of his bulletproof vest and helmet. Whether it was the shock of the action, the braggadocio of the act, or possibly the suspicion that he wasn't the most well-liked man in the unit, I was immediately relieved when the colonel began slowly clapping, and the entire group joined him and cheered. Chapter 3. My hand hurts. Alonso put his foot in the caddy, and we rocketed through the velvety night like a pastel panther. From hitting the policeman? I readjusted the blue Sharpie in my shirt pocket, making sure the cap was on. From signing autographs. The seer smiled at me. I must admit that I had a moment of genius, Mr. Lilly. It was an act of desperation. Alonso passed the slower-moving traffic while dodging the potholes and the Southern Juarez buses. We were driving through a neighborhood made up of old industrial buildings, which looked like a great place to get killed. How did you know he'd go for it? The colonel is a great fan of American football, and I knew he would not pass up an opportunity to meet a celebrity, even if he had small doubts, no? Does this mean we're dropping the gun-buying ploy? Perhaps. Being a football star might work better given your size. Fine with me. I'd just as soon not spend the next 200 years in a Mexican prison. I glanced around at the large warehouses along the road and could see young women walking the dimly lit streets. What's going on here? Maquiladoras, assembly plants along the industrial zone which allow duty and tariff-free manufacturing between borders. My people work for about 1/6 of their counterparts in Los Estados Unidos because they have to. When the program started in the mid-80s, it was a workforce mostly comprised of men, but then they found that young women had better manual dexterity and would work longer hours, so they are mostly girls now. He lowered his chin onto the back of his hand. It is where Los Perdidos, the lost ones, mostly come from, the women who go missing and are killed in the city. He adjusted his hat. The young ones come from the country, girls with little or no experience in the world, but are drawn here by the promise of wages. He gestured to the surrounding area he could not see. Tell me, does this look like a nice place to work? No. They have no money, so they walk or take public transportation where there is little police protection. How many go missing? Hundreds, possibly thousands. I sighed. Why doesn't somebody do something? Most of the local police are corrupt, and the machismo of the local men does not help. These young women, in their eyes, are abandoning the responsibilities of children and home and are taking jobs from the men. So it's okay to kill them? They are seen as expendable. Why are you telling me this? He swallowed. I do not think that you should get your hopes up that your daughter is alive. I braced a hand against the seat and then shook my head. He wouldn't kill her. At least not until he has me. She's the only guarantee he has. Have you spoken with her since she has been missing? No. I stared at the bag of guns next to my boots. We're headed south toward the nature preserve? Yes, but first we must visit a man, a friend, who is more knowledgeable about the area where we are going than any of us. Now he is a doctor, a very good one. But in his youth, he was famous for his hunting skills and was a member of the Cisen. His name is Adan Martinez. The seer grinned. He is a cabron, a bastard, but he is my friend. What's Cisen? Our country's version of your Central Intelligence Agency. What did he hunt? Jaguars. I grunted. Sounds treacherous. It is really his sister you must stay away from, the Bruja de la Piel. Alonso called over his shoulder for my benefit. The Skin Witch. She is very dangerous. We sat in silence as Alonso drifted to the left. The dust broiled up behind us on a dirt road that seemed to stretch on till yesterday. I tilted my head back on the roomy seat and stared at the stars that didn't seem so much different from the ones back home. I had powerful backup, but I wasn't so sure they would be able to find me where I was going. How would they follow my trail or even have an idea of where I actually was? There are things I could have arranged better, but I knew I needed to get Katie back as fast as I could, and the only way to do that was to first find her. I pulled my hat over my eyes after a while, figuring at this point one part of the desert was pretty much like any other. I hadn't gotten much sleep lately, and didn't figure I was going to be getting any in the near future. So I closed my eyes. In the darkness, I could only see the two giant rock towers that were pictured on the vintage linen postcard that I had received in Durant, Wyoming, with a postage mark from Juarez, Mexico. Gemelos de Roca was the name given to the geologic formation on the card, with a dirt path tracing its way between the pinnacles, a few gnarled cactus, and a lone, sad-looking burro standing on the trail, evidently placed there for scale. I had memorized every aspect of the postcard in my pocket, the faded crosshatches and the texture of the paper in the light blue skies, the vivid greens of the cactus, and the ominous towers of volcanic rock. Gemelos de Roca, La Formación, and Chihuahua, on one side, and on the other, a one-word message, "Come," with Hecho en México at the bottom, the stamp and outline of the country, with a golden eagle eating a snake in an almost purple ink. The word was printed in the center, just to the left of a thin vertical line that separated it from my home address. Come. That word had haunted me for days and nights. We had been in a battle with Tomas Vidal for more than a year, and in that time he had hired the Dead Center Association to try to kill me, had murdered Katie's husband, and had forever damaged Vic. Then he had kidnapped my daughter, and we had gone from a removed hit-and-run aggression to open warfare. It was with that comforting thought that I must have drifted off to sleep. I woke up with a start and rolled my head to the side, feeling my hat falling onto my lap. I wiped the drool from the side of my face and looked around, making out a two-story building with arched entryways to my right and what looked to be an abandoned mission to my left. There were a few small adobe structures and an old water tower with the words Puerto Seguro spray-painted on the side. Though picturesque and fragrant with the scent of a wood fire lingering in the air, the structures were in differing states of disrepair, and the entire village appeared abandoned. There were mountains rising behind, and in the stark moonlight they looked like cardboard cutouts in some old serial Western studio backlot. There was a large, humped massive to the left, shaped a little like Cloud Peak back home in the Bighorn Mountains, and there was a rough-looking road that split the tiny village and traveled up through the foothills before disappearing over a hill. There was a pass, a forbidding gateway that led higher into the black, charred lava rock that looked like scorched earth and that looked nothing like Absaroka County. At the center of the village there was a pole sticking up from the road. It was about 6 feet high, and impaled on it was the head of a wild boar. I pushed the seat on the passenger side of the caddy forward and opened the door. Standing a little unsteadily, I took a deep breath and scrubbed the circulation back into my face, certain that if I hadn't slept long, I'd slept deep. I gently closed the door on the Cadillac, and leaning on the ridiculous car, studied the nearest building. Made of adobe brick, the tan-colored structure looked as if it might have been a mansion or an old hotel. Either way, it had seen better days, but there were multicolored lights on the second floor, and I heard laughter and the soft murmur of Spanish voices. A black cat with a white chest and four white paws came over and rubbed against my leg, and I reached down to give him a scratch when I noticed a gaping wound on the side of his head beside the jaw. I petted the top of his head, stood up straight, and nudged him away with my boot. A set of stairs across the brick patio to my left led to an opening in the plaza. Mounting the steps, I passed a window and saw through the parted curtains a kitchen with two women, one of whom was cooking on an old wood-burning stove. I was about to continue the climb when I became aware of someone standing at the top. The backlit figure was female, very female. Holding a number of empty plates, she continued down toward me. "I told them to wait for all of you, but they are like cerdos," She stopped 2 steps above me, putting her at eye level, shifted the dishes into her left hand, and extended her right.
"You are the sheriff?"
I shook it, and her fingers were strong. "Aud Longmire. I'm a sheriff."
"The one whose daughter was taken?"
I nodded. She studied me, and from the trapezoid of light from the kitchen, I could see she was maybe 50. Remarkably beautiful, with a thick coif of black hair waving to her shoulders, which were decorated with complex tattoos. She had unsettling eyes, a remarkable violet color, like a high plain sky before a lightning storm. She paused for a moment more and then shouldered past me.
"Go up, sheriff. I will bring you some food."
"What's your name?" She threw it over her shoulder.
"Bianca."
I paused for a moment, trying to remember how the seer and Alonzo had referred to her.
"Nice to meet you, Bianca."
She turned at the bottom of the stairs and looked up at me.
"Flour or corn?"
"Excuse me?
Tortillas. You like flour or corn?"
"I don't really know."
"You have never been to Taco Bell?"
I watched her go, turned, and topped the second floor. Looking to my right, I saw my party, along with another man and woman, seated on wooden chairs that surrounded a round table with a metal surface, impaled by a large umbrella with a thatched cover. The Christmas lights strung around the periphery. There were a few remainders from dinner, and a number of shot glasses and a bottle with a handwritten label.
"Hola!"
The seer, without turning, motioned for me to approach.
"Your Spanish is improving marvelously, no?"
I could see a large old-fashioned flashlight and all the handguns that had been in Guzman's gym bag spread out on the table.
"Those are mine."
The other man there, who I assumed was Eden Martinez, picked up a semi-automatic and casually aimed it at me.
"What if I want this one?"
Already having it unholstered, I swung my own .45 around and pointed it at his head, centering on his right eye. "Then we'll have to see if the short recoil operating and locking system that uses a diagonal cam at the rear of the barrel sliding against a diagonal receiver-mounted groove on that Obergon works better than the swinging link and pin of my Colt." There was an uncomfortable silence. The man exploded in laughter, hugging the woman beside him as the others joined in the merriment.
"Not unlike the Austro-Hungarian Steyr M-1912?
I kept the 1911 pointed at him, noticing the sharpness of his features along with an abbreviated goatee and Dizzy Gillespie cookie duster under his lower lip.
"Nope."
He raised the barrel of the Obergon toward the starry sky.
"The conclusion that my country came to in the mid-30s when they turned it down for military service, an opportunity they did not afford my grandfather."
I lowered my own sidearm.
"It also helps if you put the magazine in it, which, from my last inspection, appears to be missing, along with any .45 ACP ammunition."
He gestured toward my Colt.
"You appear to have some. Perhaps you will loan me?"
Stuffing the .45 back in my pancake holster, I glanced around the table.
"Maybe later."
Reaching over, I dragged another chair from the railing and sat as Martinez slid the bottle with the milky liquid toward me.
"Mezcal."
"No thanks.
Made locally."
I glanced around from the perspective of the second story. "Doesn't particularly seem to be a bevy of going concerns around here." He shrugged, glancing at the woman.
"Ah," he looked toward the mountains. "It was a nice village once, before the locusts came."
"How is it you're allowed to remain?"
"We have an understanding, the cartels and I."
"And what's that?"
"If they come here, I will kill them."
"Have you had to kill many?"
"From time to time."
He picked up the flashlight and turned it off and on twice in the direction of the water tower where someone flashed the same signal back at him.
"Would it surprise you to know that you've had a .416 Rigby aimed between your shoulder blades since you arrived?"
I would have been disappointed if there hadn't been something. He smiled at the seer for all the good it did, but maybe the blind man could hear smiles too.
"I like him."
The seer sipped his own mezcal along with Alonzo.
"He does not rattle easily."
"No?"
"He will have other opportunities."
Aidan studied me.
"Do you hunt?"
"I used to when I was young."
"You are going to have to reinvigorate your sense of the hunt. In this part of the world you are either the hunter or the hunted.
Martinez held out a hand. Show me the postcard. I pulled it from my shirt and handed it to him. He turned it in his hands like a relic, read the single word, and then handed it back to me.
I know this place.
Is it far?
A lifetime away.
I glanced over my shoulder toward the mountains.
I need to get there.
You cannot get there from here.
I've heard that in Wyoming before.
He shook his head.
There used to be a bridge across the canyon on that road, but it caved in years ago. And the only way across now is a trail that leads to the old bridge and the river, neither of which are passable.
Then how?
You will have to go south to Torero, and then use the ridge road that leads into the mountains, but Torero is a very dangerous town. The last semi-civilized place before you go into Estante del Diablo.
He took the last sip of his drink.
It is south, but it is late, and you must first eat and then get some sleep.
I have been sleeping.
Then you must eat.
He smiled and hugged the unnamed woman at his side.
My sister has fixed food for you, but since the rest of us are going to bed, you may be more comfortable in the kitchen where she is waiting.
He stood, indicating the party was over.
I suggest you get more rest after that. Tomorrow will be a long day.